I'm sure Mike Leonard wants to get a part of this conversation. Hey, Mike, how are you doing, my friend?
John, I was dying to ask Jerry a couple questions. Have her call back in, please.
What do you want to know? Come on.
I really was interested because, she had started off talking about serving on civil cases, and so I wanted to see if she ever got called in a criminal case because one of the, questions that's always asked during the jury selection process, which is called voir dire, is, do you have close friends, family members who are members of law enforcement? And from a defense lawyer perspective, when people say yes to that, it's often a disqualifying factor. You think, oh, there's no way this person's going to be on my side. And so generally, they get stricken.
Because her father was a police officer,
Yeah, not for cause. So it's not a for cause challenge, meaning that's not a basis in and of itself. So you'd have to use one of the strikes you're given, which you call the peremptory challenge. When you have a certain amount of those, you don't have to say why. But typically, we strike people who have strong ties to law enforcement because it's our belief, and maybe wrongly, that they're not going to be in our favor. So I was going to ask Jerry how many criminal cases she's been on, and did they ask her extensive questions about her connections to people in law enforcement?
Well, if Jerry wants to call back in, she can get on back on the line. But she's already served 10 times, Mike, and joined us on WGN Radio. She sounds incredible for 86, so maybe she'll be able to answer that question. How's everything at Leonard Trial Lawyers, my friend?
Great. Yeah, if we could be as sharp as Jerry at 86,
oh my gosh,
we're going to do well. So I think we should keep doing the show until we're 86.
Amen. Oh, by the way, what did you think? 779 says, when they start paying me more, I'll go more, which I think is a reasonable thing to say. I don't think we have the money for it, but it'd be great if we could pay a little bit more. What if you don't show up a bunch of times and you've been summoned? That's no good, right, Mike?
Well, typically, most courts enforce that. So if you don't show up, theoretically, you could be called into court against your will. It doesn't really happen very much, or they could fine you or something like that. But there are supposed to be consequences. So if you blow it off, there is supposed to be a consequence. But the question of, being paid for your time, it comes up a lot. And the problem is you can't really tailor the system to pay everybody what they're making at their jobs.
Of
right?
course.
And so, unfortunately, everyone's given a pittance, and it literally is a pittance. It's like $40 a day, $30 a day. And if you're in a federal court case and you're coming down to Chicago and you're from the suburbs, and sometimes you're as far as an hour to an hour and a half away, it's not going to pay your mileage. It's not going to pay your parking if you choose to park. And so many people raise that as an issue, particularly people who are self-employed, who aren't making a lot of money. They'll raise that as an issue. Judge, I can't really afford this. And sometimes the judges are sympathetic to that, but oftentimes not, because the problem is, especially when they say it out loud, of course, everyone else is thinking, hey, if this person gets off of the jury because of that, maybe I will too.
Right.
But there are certain circumstances where the judges certainly will excuse somebody if they're like, hey, I got this thing, I'm the only person who can do it, it's been scheduled for 3 months. Things like that come up, and oftentimes judges will make exceptions. But the general proposition that, hey, I have a job and I have to get paid usually doesn't get you off the jury.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it is your civic duty, right? And it's the price we pay to live in a civilized society. But I also haven't been summoned. So, that's really easy for me to say. Mike, do you mind if we take a couple jury questions and you could follow up with some of these people?
I would love it. And then maybe we can start interrogating these former jurors, John.
Well, we're going to start with Dennis. Dennis has a unique story. Hey, Dennis, you're on WGN. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You've got a unique jury situation here, huh?
Yeah, I actually did two murder trials at 26th in California. And, and they were both death penalty cases as well.
Oh, so this was a few years back when death penalty was still allowed here in Illinois?
Yes, it was quite a while ago, but it is an experience because most people have never done a murder trial. So, yeah.
To do two of them. So these were two separate cases, like a year apart or something.
Yes. I got called for jury duty 2 years in a row, and I tried my hardest to get out of the second death, but it didn't work.
So were both people found guilty ultimately or not guilty or what?
They were both found guilty. But, at that point in time, I don't know if it's still the same way, there are two phases of a death penalty case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the trial portion where you're either guilty or not guilty, and then there's the portion where they want to know whether you should get the death penalty or not. And both cases, neither of them got the death penalty, but it was life without possible parole.
What was that, sitting there knowing that you had someone's life literally in your hands?
I mean, it was, you know, the stuff that was presented, they were both kind of gruesome cases.
Yeah.
But I found it very, very interesting. I mean, it was, you know, it was an experience that I hope I don't have to do it again. But it was so interesting at the end. You know, we were able to talk. The judge brought us all in the back, and we were able to talk to him and ask questions of the, you know, the lawyers, both the defense and the prosecuting lawyers.
Wow. Mike, you want to jump in with any questions you have for Dennis?
Yeah, Dennis, that sounds like some great experiences. I think Dennis gets to a point, too, that, you know, often people say, gee, I don't want to serve, I don't want to be on this jury. But almost uniformly, people say when they're done that they've really, I don't know, enjoyed is the right word, but definitely got a lot out of the experience. A lot of people say, absolutely, they enjoyed it. And I think I'd like to hear Dennis speak to this issue, but there's sort of a bonding that happens, especially in a longer trial, because you're spending a bunch of time with 11 other people that you don't know, and all of a sudden you're getting to know them pretty well and spending 8 hours a day together, and then the deliberation process is even more intimate. Can you speak to that, Dennis? Was there sort of a gelling of the group over the course of the trials?
Yeah, I mean, I've lost touch with some of the people that I was, you know, with, but we ended up, you know, actually kind of being friends and were in touch for a while. But, you know, one of the cases was 2 weeks, and the other one, I think, was 10 days.
Wow. You get to know people.
Yeah, we got to know people very well.
Chris DeFlores, our engineer, yeah. Mike, just said that even a couple of them, she was on a civil case for like 8 days, and they exchanged numbers afterwards. And I think that if you've never served on a jury like I haven't, that almost seems insane to me. But I guess it's not only that you share a lot of space with each other, but you're talking about critical things with each other. You kind of get to know someone a little bit and their mores and taboos a little bit, Mike.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. I'm sure Dennis could attest to that. Dennis, what in your cases, was the evidence close enough in any way that when you went back to deliberate, did you have splits in the votes? For instance, were you at 10-2 in favor of the government or 8-4, anything like that? Or was it more obvious in terms of your deliberations and your results?
Well, it was pretty obvious that, you know, I mean, I think we had a couple of dissenters that weren't in agreement, but, you know, we went back and we talked about it. I mean, I think the longest deliberation was probably, I think we spent 6 hours deliberating on one of the cases, and we managed to change minds and, you know, get, you know, they were guilty, but we definitely didn't come to, it's got to be a unanimous decision to get the death penalty, and nobody could, you know, could come to a unanimous thing about that. But whether they were guilty or innocent, that ended up, you know, being a unanimous thing in both cases.
I want to ask Dennis, so then in that death penalty phase, and obviously Illinois doesn't have the death penalty anymore, or at least, I don't know if it's off the books now or just not being enforced, but anyways, I should look that up, or Mike probably knows off the top of his head. But Dennis, did you want the death penalty personally, if you feel comfortable asking it, or did you not?
Well, you know, I mean, I used to think it was a good thing, you know, but over the years, I'm like, you know, if it was that good, people wouldn't be still doing the stuff that they're doing, you know, and obviously it's, you know, it can't, I don't know if it can or can't be given anymore, but it's obviously not a very, or wasn't a very persuasive thing to get people to cut the stuff out that they were doing, you know.
Yeah, I always also felt, and Dennis, this is awesome to get your mind in this, that there's not many people that have, in Illinois especially, that have been served on death penalty cases, but I just the idea that it's final forever, not even from like a justice standpoint, or but just the idea of we've had so many overturns, not that you guys got it wrong, but like just knowing that you could never go back from that if there were appeals after appeals and new evidence was found would kind of haunt me at night. But Mike, we got to hit a commercial break. You got one last question for Dennis, or is jury questioning of Dennis over, Mike?
I got a quick one. Maybe hold him over, but tell us what most bothered you, if anything, about the defense lawyers and their approach to the cases.
Ooh, yeah, Dennis, if you remember.
You know, it's been quite a while ago, and I don't really remember. I don't think I really had too many issues with them. You know, I mean, they presented the case, and, you know, and we went and we did our civic duty as it was, you know?
Yeah. That's great. Dennis, I appreciate that. I know that must have been a really harrowing experience to go through. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling in, okay, Dennis?
You're very welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. Mike Leonard, this is fun.
Thanks, Dennis. Take care. It is. Hopefully we got more, John. But, yeah, you could almost talk endlessly about it because everyone has very different experiences and very unique experiences. I think everyone likes to talk about it, too, because it is a unique opportunity to get to know people as well.
Yeah. And the phone lines are lighting up, so we'll have to do more of this. Mike, stay on the line. That's Mike Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers, federal defense attorney, does whistleblower cases too. All-around great guy, fights for the little guy, fights against the man. Mike, I think I've got you summed up pretty well there.
Oh, that's a fair assessment. Yeah, some more nice things about me, but keep going.
I will. Oh, wait. Oh, no, we're out against the break. All right, breaking in the news here on Let's Get Legal on WGN. Hey, you're listening to WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, and we're chatting with Mike Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers. And Mike, we're talking kind of about jury duty, and we've got a lot of jurors who have served calling in and ready to withstand some questioning from you, Mike.
Let's do it, John. You know, after all those commercials, it just made me think that WGN's making too much money. And so maybe you and Iridian should just, you know, give back to the public some of your large salaries with all that revenue that's coming from all the commercials.
Wow, Mike. You are on a fine line, my friend. all right, let's...
I'm sure Iridian right now is laughing, right?
Yeah, she's asking where her money is, actually. Okay, let's go to Steve. Steve's been holding for a while. Hey, Steve, what's your story?
Well, back in 1989, I had just started a brand new job, and I had received the request to do jury duty. I put it in, and I went there on a Monday.
Uh-huh.
I sat there in the big jury room. This is Lake County, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And I got picked for a jury.
Okay.
They called me in there, and I sat there. And it said, no one's been sequestered in the last 10 years. I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, cool. You know.
Okay.
First day, I got picked for a jury. And it was a kidnapping.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so we sat there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We had one gentleman who could not come to terms on the verdict. And we ended up being sequestered.
Oh, my goodness.
And after that, the next morning, within 25 minutes, we came to a verdict. We found him guilty because the gentleman who couldn't come to terms with it says, yeah, you're right. He's right. And the judge came up and seen us after that, and he says, this is on appeal. And he was found guilty the first time. But we did eat good. That's one thing.
You did eat good. So you had to be sequestered for what, the Friday night into through Monday?
Saturday morning.
Oh, Saturday morning they brought you back.
Yeah. Wow. We came back Saturday morning. Then I go out to my truck and I get a ticket for parking overnight. Yes. But I took it to the Waukegan police station and they took care of it.
All right, Mike, any questions for Steve?
Well, just thanks for sharing that story, Steve. I really enjoyed hearing it. One interesting point that was raised by Steve is it's highly unusual to sequester a jury. And, you know, sequestration means that, you know, they're going to stay overnight, they're going to be together, and the idea is to stop them from having outside influences. And so it's extraordinarily rarely used. You know, it was used in things like the OJ trial.
Mm-hmm.
It might be used in a drug lord's trial, you know, something like where they're worried about potential tampering or intimidation. So highly unusual in Lake County. But the even weirder thing, and I kind of like to do some follow-up, is that you would almost never sequester a jury at the point of deliberation, particularly when they're deadlocked, you know, because it's really almost like a pressure tactic. Hey, since you can't, you know, reach a verdict, we're going to sequester you. And I'm sure I could bet my last WGN dollar, John, that case was appealed, and likely the sequestration issue was probably raised as a basis for the appeal, arguing that that was improper, that you either sequester the jury because there's a reason to do it to begin in a case, and to do it in the middle of deliberations was improper. So I'd love to know what happened on appeal with that case.
Yeah, Steve, did you follow what happened on the appeal or no?
The appeal, he was found guilty.
Okay, so
he was found guilty.
Okay, so they didn't overturn.
Steve was explaining that the reason why he was being retried is because there was an appeal that probably remanded the case back for a new trial. What I'm saying is, because of the verdict and because of the judge's actions in sequestering the jury during deliberations, I'm sure that case went on appeal again, and I'm sure that was an issue that was raised by defense counsel.
Hold on. Wait. So I get your question, Mike. Steve, was this retried or no? It just went on appeal, and he was turned down.
This was his appeal, and he was turned down.
Okay, so there wasn't a second trial.
We did find him guilty.
Okay, there wasn't a second trial. All right, Steve, thanks for the phone call. 312-981-7200. So I think Mike, it was just a one guilty and then not appeal. It's a great question, though. That is unusual, right? And it seemed to work. Well, it seemed to work for that one guy,
like,
right?
It sounds like the judge told him that, like, what he was explaining was that this was back because it had been appealed. So it sounds like to me there was a prior trial, which they wouldn't be able to speak about, but if the judge is telling them it's here because of an appeal, that means he was probably tried once.
I thought the judge said it's getting appealed.
He might have been tried a third time because of the sequestration issue. So yeah. I'd love to know what happened on that issue.
Yeah. Well, we can't break. You don't get to know everything, Mike. I'm sorry.
I know. We got all these callers
we got to get to.
The listeners are generating.
All right. Let's go to Jack really quickly. Hey, Jack, you're on WGN. What's up?
Okay, I have a kind of an interesting story, and I'll make it quick, but a few years back, I was called for jury duty. I ended up on jury duty downtown Chicago. I had a lady judge, can't remember her name, nice young lady with short black hair. Anyway, we get up into the jury box, and I get picked, et cetera. We get up there, and it's a young man who was in an accident. He's against an insurance company.
Civil case.
So, civil case. So anyway, so what happened was that one of the first things the judge tells you when she's giving you instructions is turn off your cell phones, blah, blah, blah. Well, as we started the trial and we're sitting there, all of a sudden the cell phone goes off up in the jury box. And I'm looking at the guy next to me and saying, she told you to turn the thing off. Can you turn your phone? He said, I don't have a phone. I looked down, it was my phone.
No!
I thought I turned it off.
Did you get in trouble, Jack, or were you nicely reminded?
Well, here's what the judge did. I wish I knew her name. I'd vote for her tomorrow. Here's what happened. She said, you folks need to turn your phones off. And she says, you need to get that, Mr. Wagner? And I said, no, Judge. She said, well, it might be important. And I said, no, I don't think so. And this is in front of everybody. And she says, well, is it important? I says, well, actually, Judge, it's for you. And she laughed. The whole courtroom laughed, et cetera. I'm lucky I didn't go to jail. But anyway, she said, okay. So we turned it off. She says, you need to turn your phones off. That took care of that. We went to the back to deliberate after the trial. And we get in the back almost immediately. I'm picked as the foreman of the jury because now I'm popular with the jury, right?
Okay.
They're the ones that they pick you. So they make me the foreman. So my first question in my mouth was, listen, is there anybody that wants to find in favor of the defendant in this case? It was obvious he was getting railroaded.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and everybody there says we're in favor of the defendant. It was unanimous.
Wow.
So, okay, so I pushed the button. I pushed the button on the wall. The sheriff's officer comes in, says, can I help you? She said, we wanted lunch. I said, we have a verdict. She said, what? I said, yeah, we have a verdict. She says, okay, sit still. She goes out. She comes back a few minutes later and gets us and takes us back out and sits us down in the jury box. It says, if you found a verdict, we blah, blah, blah. And we said, we find in favor of the defendant. She said, okay. So that took care of that. So she dismissed the jury. But she said, Mr. Wagner, can you wait for a few minutes. I'd like to talk to you. And I said, I'm in trouble, you know, over the telephone, making a joke like that in the courtroom. Instead, she says two things. Number one, she says, in my opinion, your verdict was 100% on the dime. You guys hit the nail on the head. You're correct. And I said, oh, that's good. She says, that's how I would have ruled. She says, number two, she says, I want to personally thank you for coming to a verdict so quick. She says, I was going to have to go make arrangements to pick up my daughter from school, thinking it was good. But now I can go get her. I don't have to.
Oh. Wow.
So that was my experience down at the Daly Center with this judge. I wish I remembered her name.
I love how it is, you know, they're people too, right? Like, everyone's got things to do.
She had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
Instead of scolding me for my phone, she asked me if it was important. So when she said that, she smiled. I said, well, actually, Judge, it's for you.
Yeah, that's a good line. That's a good line. Mike, any follow-ups?
Well, I'd say Jerry has great comedic timing.
Yes.
So I think that's what helped him. Yeah, a lot of judges would be real angry and would seize the phone, and you're not getting the phone back till the end of the trial. But it sounds like she handled it extremely well. One question for you, Jerry.
It's what Jack, actually, but that's okay.
Sum? Oh, Jack. I'm sorry, Jack. Jack, what was the monetary sum that the plaintiff was seeking as recovery in the case?
You know what? I don't remember. It was a couple of insurance companies, and it was this kid was the plaintiff, and the case was something around revolved around him supposedly going through a red light and hitting somebody, and there was an injury, et cetera. But it was obvious that that the kid did not do it, that they were setting this kid up.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
And she agreed. The judge agreed with me. She says, I want to tell you that you made the right decision. That's how I would have ruled.
Awesome. Thanks for the call, Jack. Is that unusual, Mike?
Okay.
We appreciate your time. Yeah, thank you, Jack. I got to go into other callers. Mike, is that unusual for a judge afterwards to say, yeah, you guys are probably right?
No, I would say, I mean, sometimes they say things like that. I mean, typically they meet with the whole group. They'll say, hey, I'd like to talk to you in chambers, get a chance to personally thank you, and then they'll talk to them for a few minutes. But yeah, oftentimes they'll say, gee, I think you did a good job. I think you got it right here. Some judges wouldn't say that, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, okay.
You know? And they typically do bring the group back. So I think Jack got brought back just because he was funny.
Yeah.
but that was nice. Sounds like the judge handled the jury very well in that case.
For sure. All right, we got more phone calls to get to. Ken's been holding for a while. Same with Shannon. We'll try and get to Matthew, too. All next with Mike Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers on WGN. Having fun today. Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers, LeonardTrialLawyers.com. And he's getting to question our jurors of WGN listeners who have served on juries. Mike, this is a fun one.
Yeah, I have my own quick story, but I wanted to hear the callers first. So if I don't get it in today, we'll talk about it next time.
Okay.
I'd rather hear the callers. They're more interesting to me, John, quite frankly, as you know.
Than either of us, for sure. Ken's been holding for a while. Ken, it's been a while since you served on the jury. What's your story?
Actually, about 30 years ago, I was called for a jury where a man had killed his wife.
Oh, no.
And it turned out that he had purchased a food processor from a local store, and part of her body.
Let's not get too graphic. Okay.
We didn't have to see the gruesome pictures, but anyhow, we found him guilty, and he went to prison for life. Well, a number of years later, so I saw where he had petitioned for parole, and on the reason that he had been discriminated against, because he was Hispanic. So I wrote a letter to the parole board, and I said he was not found guilty because he was Hispanic. It was because he killed his wife.
Whoa.
They denied his parole.
Wow.
And not just for mine, but I suppose other jurors had sent in information as well.
Well, I don't know. Did anyone notify you that that was coming up, or did you just happen to follow along and take it on yourself?
I just happened to follow it in the paper.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if no other jurors wrote it. I mean, I don't really know. Did you talk to any of the other jurors by any chance, or no?
No, I didn't really remember who they were. It was so long ago.
Yeah.
It was really a jarring trial for the community.
Well, Ken, I think that you, I mean, I don't know, if I were on a parole board, look, I appreciate the parole board is there, and, you know, there are obviously discrimination amongst juries in some cases, you clearly, I think it was important to hear that voice as a parole board saying, hey, look, I served on this jury. It had nothing to do with his race. This is what it was. Mike, I mean, what a stand-up thing for Ken to do, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure that was powerful evidence for the group of people hearing that. And, you know, quite frankly, it sounds like somewhat of a weak argument in the context of a parole. Typically, right. You're going to argue that you're rehabilitated, different things have happened since you've been incarcerated, blah, blah, blah. But typically, you're not going to attack the jury verdict because that's not going to get you anywhere. Usually, that would get you detained on a continued basis because basically they would view you as not accepting responsibility,
right,
and not accepting responsibility for the verdict. So it doesn't sound like there's a very good tactic. And, Ken obviously exercised his rights, which was cool. And I'm sure that, you know, it's probably pretty unique and rare that that actually happens where a juror would write in.
I was going to say.
Sounds like from the facts, he probably didn't have a strong shot.
Yeah.
In terms of getting his sentence. Getting parole on his sentence.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly helps, though, that it never hurts that Ken. Hey, Ken, thank you for holding and thank you for your service, yeah. Okay?
Have a good day. Bye.
Yeah. Well, that was an important call. Ken. Yeah, Ken called and stayed on hold for a half hour there. A lot of people calling in. Bob's got a quick question. Bob, we're got about 3 minutes left. What's your question for Mike?
Well, I served about 40 years ago on two different juries. One was a Pettit jury. And one was grand jury. And there was the unique touch of the Pettit. I went to high school with a woman who was a judge. Huh. And we deliberated that case. And we probably were on it for about 3 hours. And then the bailiff came in and said the two lawyers decided that they would agree on a decision. And all of those jurors continued to sit in the jury room to debate what would our decision have been.
Huh. Interesting.
And then the grand jury was a completely different approach. We had to serve, I believe, this is both in Kane County. I believe we had to serve for 6 months, and we had to go in for a full day once a week. And we would have the state's attorney come before us with particular cases. And I think we had about 20 people on the grand jury. And the state's attorney of Kane County nominated me as the foreman of the jury.
Wow.
And it was very interesting. Okay. Any of the people in the grand jury could ask questions of the witnesses that the prosecuting attorney was bringing before the jury.
Now, that's the unique thing. You get to actually ask the witnesses questions.
We didn't have the witnesses. Oh. We had only the witnesses of the prosecution.
Ah, right. Right.
And there's one particular state's attorney that stood out. I don't know if he had gotten up on the wrong side of bed that morning, but one of the grand jury.
I got about 10 people, seconds, Bob. Can you tell it quickly?
One of the grand jury people came in late. That state's attorney got all over her case. I don't want her in here. She's going to be hearing only part of the case. And each of the jurors can excuse themselves from any case. They did not have to vote. And he was all up and down. And I look back and I should have gotten onto his case and pointed out when he said, this is my grand jury. No, this is the county's grand jury.
Amen, Bob. I got to let you go, Bob. I'm sorry, but Absolutely. Thank you so much for Absolutely, calling in. Bob. Mike, we got about 30 seconds. Your reaction to Bob and grand jury is interesting, huh?
Yeah, grand jury is completely unique. And as probably a lot of your listeners know, and Bob would have explained, all they're deciding is there probable cause to charge somebody with a crime. They're not deciding guilt and innocence. And so typically, and I would have liked to question Bob a little bit about
this. We have no time. Sorry.
Grand jurors return indictments because it's a one-sided presentation of evidence.
We'll have to have him call back. Chris is on hold. I'm not going to get to Chris. Shannon, Matthew, I'm so sorry we didn't have time to get you guys today. Mike, next time you come on, let's do this again. We'll get those other phone calls.
Can we do one more hour?
No, we cannot. We got Dave Plyer coming up next. Mike Leonard, LeonardTrialLawyers.com.